Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Michael Gaughan, owner of the South Point Hotel and Casino and Spa. Mr. Gaughan will be speaking to us tonight about Las Vegas legend Benny Binion. A couple weeks ago, we spoke about players being dealt a hand at video poker and whether by machine malfunction or possible player sloppiness, one of the buttons become unheld, resulting in the player receiving much less for the hand than he would have if the buttons were held properly. On the show, we indicated that in some places, the casinos will assume the machine malfunction and pay the player. And some casinos don't do that. Richard, are there any analogous situations in table games?
Yeah, absolutely. Things happen where usually in the game of blackjack, somebody will receive a card and then say, I didn't mean to take that card. Sometimes it's obvious, you know, the player had hard 19, and sometimes it's not as obvious. And just like with video poker, some places will just tell them, you know, give them the money, and some places won't. I think sometimes casinos get very short-sighted and will spend a lot of time arguing about a $10 or $20 bet when the amount of time they're wasting, if they just, you know, either paid the hand or pushed the hand or whatever, made a decision and moved on, it would just be much better for both sides. It's a customer service business, so you want to keep the customers happy.
I would suspect that if this is the first time a player did this, he's almost always going to get the benefit of the doubt. If he's a regular shot taker, he's rarely going to get the benefit of the doubt, and casinos would remember such a thing.
Sure. But some casinos are just better at customer service than others.
For sure.
Well, Richard, let me interject here. You're 100% right on, if you're going to give the person the money, or if the argument's going to go past a minute, you're better off giving him the money up front and forgetting about it. If you argue with him for 5 minutes and then throw the money at him, you don't really accomplish the whole thing. A customer is still unhappy with you, and you still lost the money. So the faster you make the decision, the better off you are.
Do you feel the same way for a $1,000 bet?
It depends on the player.
Okay, good. All right. Now, we also recently discussed a situation where a player abused the double-up feature in a way unintended by the manufacturer and ended up winning several hundred thousand dollars by this ruse. We received an email to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com from a player I'll call Peter, concerning a somewhat similar situation at the Isla Capri Casino in Pompano Park, Florida. At this casino, players are allowed to download slot club points at the machine. One time Peter was dealt his cards, and before he finished playing the hand, he downloaded $1,000. Then he finished playing the hand. For whatever reason, Peter's balance remained the same. The $1,000 he downloaded was not deducted from his accumulated balance. Peter convinced himself that he was breaking no laws, so over the next couple days proceeded to download some $90,000 off the machines in this fashion. Sure enough, he was eventually called into the casino security office. They had no clue as to how he was able to download so much money, although anybody looking at surveillance tape should have been able to figure it out rather quickly. The casino told him he would no longer be allowed to download free play until they figured out how he did this, and they even offered to pay him $5,000 to tell them his secrets. He accepted the offer after receiving a letter promising no repercussions. He told them, received his money, and a few weeks later he was barred from the casino over something very minor. They were obviously just looking for an excuse. For me today, this kind of shenanigan is definitely over the line. I personally would not do it, partly because many casinos are leery of letting me play at all and looking for any excuse to kick me out. This would be more than enough ammunition. Now, I assume I'm on surveillance camera at all times in a casino and conduct myself accordingly. In my earlier days, I may well have done this. In the mid-90s, I was in survival mode as a player. I absolutely did not want to face up to the shame of needing to go out and get a job to support myself. Today, no way. Although I might approach a casino and say that I found a leak that could easily cost them upwards of $500,000 and would be glad to tell them about it for, say, $20,000. I have no problem doing that, and I understand many players hate me for having no problem for doing that. For the record, I tried this maneuver yesterday at the South Point. It absolutely does not work. So, Richard, what would you have done?
Well, first of all, I wanted to add a couple of things. Going back to the original story, that original player was charged with a federal crime of computer hacking or something like that. I just wanted to let people know that those charges were dropped. Second,
there are still other charges pending against him.
There are other charges pending against him?
Yes.
Okay. Second, when you say that he received a letter saying there would be no repercussions, I'm guessing that that letter was something that said that he would not be charged with any kind of crime. I don't know if it actually said, you know, that he wouldn't get barred from the casino or something. But, you know, it's no surprise that he was barred from the casino. I mean, he clearly had, you know, found an error in the machine, you know, and was taken advantage of it. I can see why the casino wouldn't want him as a player. Would I have taken advantage of it? I probably would. Yeah, I probably would have. Yep. Okay.
All right.
I think it's sort of like the table games, you know, it's the casino's responsibility to police their games. And, you know, if it's broken, I would probably take advantage of it.
All right. Very good. Let's talk to Mr. Gahn. Michael Gahn has been a casino owner in Las Vegas for decades. He grew up in casinos. His father, Jackie Gahn, was a mover and shaker in downtown Las Vegas for a number of decades. Michael Gahn currently owns the South Point and all the slot machines in the airport, in addition to being one of the sponsors for this program, for which Munchkin and I are extremely grateful. Michael Gahn is a member of the Gaming Hall of Fame. Michael Gahn, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Bob, for having me here today.
To give some context to exactly when Benny Binion lived relative to you, Binion was almost 40 years old when you were born, and you were in your mid-40s when he died in 1989 at the age of 85. Your father, Jackie Gahn, was a mover and shaker in downtown Vegas at the same time as Binion. Did you yourself have a personal relationship with Benny Binion?
The Binion and the Gahn family were always very close. I went to school with three of his children. I went to school with Brenda, Ted, and Becky. Uh-huh. I still have relationships today with Becky and Jack and Brenda. So both the Jackie Gahn and Benny Binion were never partners. Jack Binion and I have never been partners, but we've all been, over the years, we're very close. my dad came to town, moved to town in 1951, and I believe that's when Benny Binion finally moved to Las Vegas, was 1951.
I think so.
And we lived about two blocks apart.
Now, for several decades, downtown Las Vegas was where it was happening here. Tell us how downtown Las Vegas in the 50s and 60s was way different than it is today.
Well, downtown Las Vegas was the hub of Las Vegas, Bob. It was other than a few of the strip hotels. Downtown had maybe over 25 casinos, all small places. But it was the entire local market went downtown, and anybody who came and stayed on the strip used to come downtown. For an afternoon or an early night.
So the places were small, like 100 yards wide or 100 feet wide.
You had the Golden Gate, you had the Monte Carlo, you had the Westerner, you had the Pioneer Club. Then across the street you had the Nevada Club, the California Club.
Was the Mint there yet, or the Las Vegas Club?
I'm on the south side working down. Now if you go up to the Vegas Club, you had the Vegas Club, you had the Silver Palace, you had the Birdcage, you had the Mint, and you had the Horseshoe.
These are all small places. Some of them still exist, although now they're quite a bit bigger.
Well, the Nugget has the whole block. You're down to where...
And the Four Queens has the next whole block, and D's has the next whole block.
Right.
And very good.
Things were different then. All the places were owned by individuals. The corporations didn't really get her until, I believe, around 1970, when Corian sold out to Baron Hilton, that's when the first corporations got licensed in Nevada. Before that, it was all individuals.
Interesting.
And with downtown, you had a lot of characters. The downtown, probably the most flamboyant character was Benny Binion.
Now, he was never able to get a casino license. He had trouble with a tax evasion situation, but he ran the Horseshoe anyway, even though he didn't have the license.
Well, it was Benny Binion's Horseshoe. His Teddy Jane, his wife, was licensed, I think all the kids were licensed other than Barbara.
Maybe Ted had a problem with licensing periodically.
That came much, much later.
Now, there are rumors that he changed the way business was done in Vegas. Do you recall any ways in which he did it?
Well, it's not that he changed business. He was Benny was probably the first person. I remember Benny had no formal education. Benny was probably one of the smartest street people I was ever around. He knew his customers. He knew what his customers liked. He catered to his customers. He upgraded when he finally got control of the Horseshoe. He upgraded it to where probably it was the only other real nice place downtown at that time was the Golden Nugget.
Wasn't he the first person to put carpet on the floor?
I don't think he was the first person, but he was the first person that he went out and hired a decorator named Charles Silverman. Back then it was Yates Silver. Actually, it was Parvin Dorman was the company that and Silverman worked for it. It later became Yates Silverman, but he was the first one Charlie came in and decored the place. It was the first place that was really decored, other than the Nugget had a pretty good Western decor.
Well, there's still an old sign that calls the Four Queens the class of downtown. So I don't know when that was the class of downtown, but it was.
The Four Queens was done by a fellow named Benny Goffstein. He was the original partner, and or he was one of the partners in the Flamingo, later the Riviera, and then he came downtown. The Four Queens was named after his three daughters and his wife.
Well, good. Now, the horseshoe was famous for you could bet however much you want as long as your first bet was your biggest.
The horseshoe was a horseshoe probably played the highest of anybody downtown. Even the strip hotels did not play high back in those days. The place that the two places where you could make a pretty good sized bet was horseshoe and the El Cortez.
Interesting. Now, Benny Binion was a big supporter of the National Finals Rodeo here in Las Vegas. You seem to have followed in his footsteps. In the mid-90s, I remember NFR ceremonies every night in early December at the Gold Coast when you owned it. Now, the South Point has the biggest equestrian center in town and is intimately involved with the NFR along with other horse events. Is Benny Binion responsible for your involvement in the NFR?
Well, Benny Binion was a person who wanted the NFR to come to Las Vegas, mainly because it was in December, and he used to talk about it for years that if they ever got a chance, they were going to bring the NFR to Las Vegas. Meanwhile, the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority had formed Las Vegas Events. Las Vegas Events initially did the first big golf tournament, and their charter was to bring other events in town. It was through Las Vegas Events and Benny Binion about bringing who got the rodeo out of Oklahoma City to Las Vegas. I was not really involved in it, other than the fact that I gave Mr. Binion and the governor my airplane for two or three trips to Colorado Springs, which was the home of the PRCA.
Very good, but now you are involved. Now the Equestrian Center and stuff.
Well, what happened was that it had been there about 3 years. I'd already served my time on the LVCVA, and I got called by Herb McDonald, who ran Las Vegas Events, and he wanted me to go on Las Vegas Events, and I turned him down.
Uh huh.
And about an hour later, I got a phone call from Mr. Binion, and I went like Mikey. I says, "Yes, Mr. Binion." And he says, "Did that McDonald fella call you?" I says, "Yeah, he called me." And he says, "Well, what do you think of that?" Well, I said, "You know, I wasn't, you know, I didn't vote for Las Vegas Events. Well, when I was on the LVCVA, and I feel like somewhat I'll be a hypocrite." And he says, "Well, I wish you'd reconsider that. I think you should go on that board." And I said, "Well, I."
Yes, sir, okay. Mr. Benny.
Yes. Well, Benny never said no to me or anything I ever asked of him, and he never liked hearing the word no. So I called her back up. I go on Las Vegas Events. Now, in Las Vegas Events, it's a board of 11 people.
Uh huh.
The one unique thing about Las Vegas Events is the only public board in Nevada that is allowed to meet in private. We're exempt from the public meeting.
Okay.
And so I'm there for about, and of the 11 members, five of them get to sit on the National Finals Rodeo Committee.
All right.
And these are the senior guys. And I'm there for about it meets every month, and I'm there my second or third month, and I get put on the National Finals Rodeo Committee. And it made some of the other senior people there a little unhappy, and I've been on the National Finals Rodeo Committee now for 25 years.
Do you think Mr. Binion had something to do with you getting placed on that board?
Definitely.
Now, speaking of horses, there's a large statue of Benny Binion that used to be outside where all the pigeons could get at it, outside of the horseshoe. Mm. And now it's inside the South Point near the slot club booth. No evidence that pigeons ever found their way to it. So how did this all happen?
That statue was made for Benny Binion's 80th birthday. And the birthday was down in Fort Worth at that big nightclub down there.
Gillies?
Pardon?
Gillies?
No, before Gillies.
Couldn't have been before Gillies. But
no, this was in Fort Worth.
Billy Bob's?
Billy Bob's.
All right.
And Billy Bob was...
Gillies is in Pasadena. I apologize for all my Texas listeners.
Yeah. And Billy Bob's is a huge place.
Yes.
It's got a dance floor, and bands will play at both ends at the same time. That's okay.
Yeah, they got several dance floors there, yeah.
So Benny closed the place down and had his 80th birthday there, and they unveiled the statue there. The statue used to sit out in front of a place for years. It finally went bankrupt, and the statue wound up at the horseshoe. And they put the horseshoe back, you know, on the back street for years and years. The horseshoe wound up with Becky Binion. Becky Binion then sold it to Harris. Harris sold it to somebody else.
LLC or something.
And then the fellow at the Four Queens wound up with it. I had tried to get the statue, and I was unable to get it. And the fellow who owns the Four Queens, called me up and said, "Look," he says, "I know you want that statue. If you give me a dollar and clean the area up that you take the statue from, you can have it."
Sounds like you could go for that deal.
And which was very, very nice of him. And so I sent my people down there. We got the statue. It was on a pedestal, which I didn't need, but I'm saying we took the pedestal out. We filled the area in that was at, and then we bring the statue out to the hotel. I got the statue in the back, kind of behind the area now that has a race book and the poker room in it, which was an add-on area.
Uh-huh.
We back then it was just dirt, it was a building, but it was just dirt on the floor, and we put a couple porters on it for 2 days. I called the lady that did the statue was named Deborah Copenhagen. And I called her about how to clean the statue. And she says, "There's two things you want to do with the statue. You not want to use steel wool. You want to use a heavy, like, Irish cut oatmeal and warm water, no steel wool. And do not tilt the statue for any reason."
The legs wouldn't support it.
Yeah, he says. No,
it's a pretty fat horse on the top, right, and skinny legs on the bottom.
Right. It's a...
I was married to a girl like
if
that.
You see, if you've seen the statues, it's about one and one half lifetime size. It's a big statue. And it weighs about 3,000 pounds. And took us about 3 days to get the statue clean because it had been outside and the pigeons had done a great job on it. And so we get it cleaned up, and now we're figuring out how to bring the statue into the hotel.
Without tilting it,
anyway. So we cut a hole in the back wall and got rollers, like logs.
Uh-huh.
And we rolled it past. We rolled it through. We to take down the outside wall, and then we had to take down an inside wall. And we rolled it past the buffet, and the pit, and the oyster bar.
So the casino was open when you were doing this.
Yeah.
All right. Here comes the horse.
It took all day to do.
Uh huh.
And we got lucky where it sits. I was going to have to brace the basement, but it sits where I wanted to put it. It was directly over a column. So once in a while, a blind squirrel finds his nuts. And
it's good to be lucky sometimes. Lucky. All advantage gamblers know that.
And that's then a statue is probably the. I wish I had a quarter for everybody who's had their picture taken with the statue. If you go past the statue, the nose is even shiny from people petting the nose.
Well, what about the butt? I would think they would pat the butt too. The butt's not shiny.
They pat the nose a little.
Huh.
So that's how the statue wound up there, and the fellow's name was Terry Cottle. He owned the Four Queens.
Uh huh. Very good. Now,
it's pretty amazing you didn't end up putting it outside, but were willing to take down two walls just to get it into the place. That's quite a project.
Richard, we talked about that for about 2-3 days. My general manager at the time was a fellow named Horst Zura, who was a longtime general manager at the Flamingo, and Horst wanted to put it outside by valet parking. And my partner Frank Totoli, he thought it would be better inside. And I had, if you've been in the South Point, we have two wide corridors.
Yes.
And the statue fits.
Yeah, it definitely fits where it is. Right. Yeah.
And we made the right decision, but it took a lot of time to do, and we had to take down some signage and the ceiling. It really was about a 3-day job to get it in place, and we're not going to move it.
Near the end of his life, Binion was attempting to get a gaming license and become respectable. He lobbied the Reagan administration, trying to get a presidential pardon so he could be eligible for this gaming license, and then an unfortunate comet happened to kill his chances for this. Tell us about that.
Well, first, Bob, Benny had always tried to get his pardon. He had worked since the middle 50s up to before he died. He always tried to get a pardon. His best chance was with President Reagan, and he had a fellow named Robert Strauss. And Robert Strauss
was he one of O.J.'s lawyers?
No, Robert Strauss was a very well connected Washington lawyer.
Okay,
in Washington D.C. and a very high powered guy, and they thought that this was going to be a done deal. Meanwhile, they were going after mobsters, the government, and they had an informant. His name was Jimmy Fratiano. Jimmy the Weasel.
Jimmy the Weasel.
And Jimmy the Weasel was testifying in San Diego, talking about different people in gambling, and somehow they brought up Benny Binion's name, and he claimed... Jimmy the Weasel claimed that... who was a hitman, by the way. That in the 50s he killed a fellow named Louis Strauss, Russian Louis, for Benny Binion, and Russian Louis was kind of an infamous fellow in the 50s who just disappeared one day and never came back. So this is now 30 years later. Meanwhile, Benny had had a heart attack, and he was in the hospital in intensive care. And some reporter had got wind of this story. But that this is what Jimmy the Weasel said about him. What's San Diego paper about? The Telegram or the Star, the San Diego Star?
It's something Tribune. It's a two-word name, but the Tribune is in there.
But anyway, he called up. Benny Binion is the only person I ever known in intensive care who ever got a phone. You're in intensive care, you get no telephone.
Well, that proves he's part of the mob.
So this somehow this guy gets through to Benny. Now Benny is by maybe 2 weeks away from getting this pardon. And a guy goes through. Benny's not feeling that well, and the guy gets through and introduces himself as I'm so and so from the San Diego Tribune, and says Jimmy Fratiano has just testified that he killed Russian Louis for you in the 50s, and Benny with no hesitation says, that's a goddamn lie. I've always done all my own killing.
Uh-huh. That must have gone really well with the
And that was the headlines in the paper. Benny Binion does his own killing. That was the end of Benny's pardon in Washington, D.C.
I'll bet. Interesting story.
Benny was always very outspoken.
We got a couple more things. I want to make sure we have time for this. A few weeks ago, Ultimate Poker through Station Casinos started. South Point Online Poker, you were first in line. Can you give us an update as to when you expect South Point Poker to be up and going or anything like that?
Well, I got out maneuvered a little bit. We think we're gonna get our license next month. One thing, Ultimate Poker was already a system that the stations had bought.
Uh-huh.
I'm coming with my own system, and have put us through a much tougher testing program.
But you think it'll be in June?
I think it'll be in June.
Very good. Hope you're right. Now let's go back to Benny Binion. Probably his biggest legacy is the World Series of Poker. This year's version will be starting in less than 2 weeks at the Rio. Now, the South Point is several miles from the Rio. Will the influx of thousands of poker players into Las Vegas over the next few months affect the South Point poker room at all?
Yeah, it'll empty it out.
It'll empty it out?
Yes.
So it'll have a negative effect on you.
It has, overall, it's positive for the actual 2-3 weeks of the tournament. It's somewhat of a hindrance.
So it's positive for the town.
Very positive for the town.
But the for your poker room in right. specific, right. it's not so good.
That was another Benny Binion innovation, a fellow named Doyle Brunson.
Oh, we've heard of him.
Texas Dolly. He used to say, Benny, we got a poker game that will change the world of poker. And he was the one that finally talked Benny in to doing the World Series of Poker. I think the first tournament they had. The first unlimited Texas Hold'em game I was less than 50 people.
Yeah, I think it was about 10. So it's changed a bit since then. Now, you told me there was a story about you and some boots that involved Benny Binion.
Oh, the boots. Benny, I'm about 22, 23. I just gotten out of college. And I was doing some skiing with Jack. Jack and I began our snow skiing together. And I worked graveyard at the Ocritez, and I came down to see Jack about going skiing somewhere, and I went in to join him for lunch. Now this was the old Horseshoe Coffee Shop, which was up front. The Horseshoes had three coffee shops: one up front, one in the rear, and then one downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
The one up front never had the Benny Binion round table. It just had about a four-man booth in it, Pullman-type booth. And I go in there, and Jack's talking to somebody, and I come up, and Jack says, I sit down. So I sit down next to the man, and the man was applying to be the restaurant manager.
Okay.
And Jack's talking to him, and I spent a lot of years in kitchens before I was 21, and the guy was a pretty knowledgeable guy. Meanwhile, Benny, it's lunchtime, and here comes Mr. Benny, and he sits down next to Jack, and they start talking about steaks. And for some reason, Benny ever asked the guy if he ever had a seared steak. And a seared steak is where you take a hot iron pan, you throw the steak in, you sear one side, flip it right over and sear the other side, and then you kind of let it cook in its own juices. I personally don't think it's a very good steak, but it's kind of a cowboy steak.
Is that sometimes called black and blue? Is that the same thing?
Very similar.
All right.
And so this fellow said he'd never seen one. So Benny jumps up and disappears. This booth is back by the kitchen door, and about 15, 20 minutes later, Benny comes back with a steak on a plate. Benny went back there and cooked up a seared steak for the guy, and handed it to the guy. And he puts it in front of the guy, and the guy takes one little bite of it and says, "Oh, that's not bad," and keeps talking to Jack. Well, you had to know Benny Binion, but I see Benny look at the guy, look down at the steak, look back up at the guy, look down at the steak, and this goes on for about 30, 40 seconds. And the guy's still talking about something else with Jack. So Benny gets to his feet, turns to Jack, and says, "Get rid of this dumb son of a bitch," and walks off. So Jack has to tell the guy that, you know, he's not going to get the job. And the guy, I got to stand up, and, you know, I'm embarrassed for the guy. He leaves, and Jack says, "Gee, I wish Dad wouldn't do that. We need a restaurant manager." So meanwhile, Benny comes back, and he says to me, he says, I see you're starting to wear cowboy boots."
Uh-huh.
"Yes, Mr. Benny, I used to buy $18 black Acme cowboy boots from Rex Bell's downtown."
They cost a bit more now.
Yeah, a little bit more. And he says, "Well, I got a pair of boots for you. Come with me."
Okay.
So I go upstairs, and Benny used to give away kind of a real pretty black mesh boot to his friends. And he had a pair of boots and had Darwin Lamb's name in it, which was Ralph Lamb's brother.
Uh-huh.
They didn't quite fit a Darwin, I guess. So Benny says to me, he says, "Try this boot on." So I take off a boot, and I kind of measure the boots up. And this boot's considerably shorter than mine. And Mr. Benny, I said, "I don't think this boot's going to fit." He says, "Put it on, son. We'll see if it fits."
"Yes, sir, Mr. Benny."
"Yeah, that's right, yes, sir, Mr. Benny." So I get the boot on, and it's tight. He says, "Well, put the other one on." I put the other one on. I said, "Boy, I think these are too tight, Mr. Benny." "No," he says, "they'll stretch. Wear them for 3 days, and they'll stretch." I wore them to work for 3 days. On the third day, I hobbled up from, you know, the three blocks from the El Cortez back up to the Horseshoe.
That's got to be longer than three blocks.
Four blocks.
Okay.
And it's a long four blocks. Uh-huh. It's awful hard to limp on both feet.
Yeah, it must have been eight blocks on those boots. Okay. Oh.
And I go up to Jack, and I says, "Jack," he says, "what's the matter with you?" I says, "Well, your dad, your dad gave me this pair of boots." He says, those old Darwin Lamb boots he's been trying to give away." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, he told me he told me they'd stretch. They haven't stretched, you see." He says, "Take them off and forget about them." I says, "What if your dad asked me?" He won't ask you.
Did he ever ask?
No, but I packed those boots around for about 10 years. I'm afraid to throw them out.
Oh, but so you don't have them in case any of our listeners have smaller feet. They're no longer available, huh?
No, they're no longer available.
All right. Now, Benny Binion was raised in Texas, and in an era where black people were not treated the same as they are today. So by today's standards, he would probably be considered a racist.
Did you? I remember when I opened up my school.
A dealing school?
A dealing school. I borrowed some tables off him.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things, I was with Jack, and I ran in the Benny, and Jack told him about the dealer school, and basically says, that's a good idea. He started to ask me a few questions about it, and then he said to me, he says, what are you going to do about the colored? I said, well, Mr. Binion, times are changing, and you know.
If they come in with the money?
He says, well, just tell them the school's full. I said, well, Mr. Binion, you know, you can't quite do that. He says, tell them the school's full. So I had my partner Frank with me. So the school was across from the Lady Luck, which was about a block and a half away from the horseshoe. And walking back, my partner said, well, you know, this is going to be hard to do. I says, Frank, I wasn't going to ask him a third time.
That's right. He told you twice.
You know, he told me twice. That's it. The first black student I got walks in the door, and nice young man. And before I could tell him that the school was full, he said, Mr. Binion asked me to see Mike Gaughan.
Really?
To become a dealer. I immediately ran to the back room and called Jack. I said, Jack, I got a man here on the dark side that's telling me that Benny sent him. He said, yes, his mother works for us, and he's been a busboy for us, and Benny wants to make him a dealer. I said, no problem.
Well, good. I'm glad that Benny started acting what would, by today's standards, be considered more reasonable before he died. That's good. All right. We thank you very, 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 very much for being here. Pretty soon we're going to have you back talking about your dad, Jackie Gaughan, because he's
getting old.
And he's a legend in downtown Las Vegas, almost as much as Benny Binion. I bet you have some Jackie Gaughan stories, too, you could tell with us.
It was very similar. Richard, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
I'll be talking to you later, Bob. Thank you.
Very good. Now, the South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. Every evening in May at 8:20 p.m., they're giving away a 2013 Camaro. You do not need to be present, but if you are, the South Point will also pay your sales tax, vehicle registration, dealer's fees, plus $2,000 in gas cards. If you take the $18,000 cash option instead of the approximately $25,000 car, you still get the $2,000 in gas cards should you be present. Four other winners each night receive $250 in Chevron gas cards. You have 24 hours to redeem your prizes. Up to 1,000 entries may be earned each day. $1 coin in per entry, and you must activate your entries at a kiosk each day between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Entries stay in the virtual drum all month long. This is a very good low roller promotion for locals who live nearby. Playing $1,000 coin in per day at an even money game isn't burdensome and gives you as much chance as the high rollers get. Another low roller special they have at the South Point in May is free bingo at 9 o'clock in the morning on weekdays. There are 10 games played, each receiving $100. If there are 50 people in the room, your EV is $20. And if there are 500 people in your EV in the room, your EV is $2. But whatever it is, it's positive. At the Palms, the Friday-Saturday night drawings in May are called the $125,000 Money Bags drawings. 10 winners are called each night. Winners 1 through 5 receive $500 and get to choose a money bag after the Saturday night drawing. Winners 6 through 10 get $250 apiece and are done. At the Saturday night drawing, you can win up to $7,000 in cash. Tickets are earned by playing machines since 8:01 p.m. the previous Saturday. On Friday and Saturday evenings between 8 p.m. and midnight, you earn three times drawing entries. The Monday, Wednesday, Friday PEW play, earn, and win gifts for the entire month will be free play. The redemption rate is 0.25%, so this is effectively double points every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, up to $83,000 coin in each of those days. As always, on the PEW gifts, you get to keep your points. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest beginning May 24th will be 100 play draw poker. As always in these contests, pick the game type with the highest variance. Videopoker.com is the site that lets you play a large variety of games at home before you try them in a casino. Those of you who try to figure out new games on the casino floor using real money are taking the worst of it. Intelligent players play and practice before they ever get to the casino. Our guest next week is Bill Zender. Bill has been on the show before. Munchkin, why don't you tell our guests a little bit about who Bill is?
Well, Bill is a casino consultant. He goes around the country, holding seminars, teaching casinos how to better protect their games. One of the things that makes him interesting is he was also a gaming agent. So he has that perspective to bring as well, and he was a professional player at one time. So he's a really knowledgeable guy. He's written several books, Card Counting for the Casino Executive, Advantage Play for the Casino Executive, as well as a couple of books called Casinoology that are really sort of about more better effective management for casinos. So it should be an interesting night.
Very good. Upcoming guests in the near future, we do have a knowledgeable person to tell us about the difference in the Total Reward Slot Club system versus the M Life. He's going to be on in mid-June. We're going to have a repeat visitor in a month or so by BJ Traveler. And we even have a champion backgammon player who is going to be on. A couple of others. We're going to get some poker player during the World Series to talk to us. So that's what's coming up. All right.
Now, and if Arnold ever finishes his book, he'll be on to talk about that.
Arnold Snyder is one of our favorite people, and sometimes he'll show up as a co-host and just help us out. And Max Rubin's another such person that if ever he wants to come and co-host, no matter which of our regular hosts are here or aren't here, they're both 100% welcome 100% of the time. All right, so we're going to throw it back to Mr. Gaughan. He wasn't expecting this, but we have a few more minutes than I was expecting. Have you thought of any other Benny Binion stories that you can share it with us now that I'm putting you on the spot?
Well, there's always a story about when Becky's Binion's Bainin, that's her husband, Nick Bainin, tried to get licensed for the Star. The Star was a casino at one time across from the Lady Luck.
Okay.
And he got turned down, and then Becky went down and tried to get the license in her name. And Becky is a wonderful lady. She was born and raised in Las Vegas, and just basically a nice person. And she got turned down for the license, and she was visibly upset. And this was turned down by the board with a 3-0 vote. And Becky was almost in tears, and her father walked her out and put her in the car. And you know how reporters are. The reporter comes up and puts a microphone, in Benny, and you know, under Benny's nose, and Benny was never lost for words. And the reporter says, "Well, what are you going to do about this, Mr. Binion?" Mr. Binion says, I want to take my little girl home and teach her the golden rule."
And what was Benny Binion's version of the golden rule?
"He who has the gold makes the rules."
Uh-huh.
And about 2 weeks later, Becky came back to the commission. We have a two-tier system here. The board turns you down. It takes a 5-0 vote by the commission to overrule the board.
Uh-huh.
And Becky got the board, or the commission overruled the board, and Becky got her license.
Uh-huh, by a 5-0 vote.
By a 5-0 vote.
Now,
you know, I remember when I lived in town, there was an enormous birthday party for Benny at the, was it the stadium at UNLV?
Oh, it was at Thomas and Mack. It was
Thomas and Mack. Yeah,
it was Willie Nelson, Hank.
Hank Williams Jr.
Hank Williams Jr. was last, and Benny left before he started. And I believe it was four people. It was sold out and it was free.
Yeah, I mean, I remember just being astounded that, I mean, because that place seats tens of thousands of people.
They packed in.
They filled the place for a birthday party for a casino owner. I thought it was a pretty amazing thing when it happened.
Although free has a little bit to do with that.
Yeah,
Richard, free is always good.
Free is always good.
I think they packed in about 16,000 for that concert. And I remember Jack's. I made two of Hank's number. Hank, if you've ever seen a Hank Williams concert, he plays rather loud. And I made two of his numbers, and I left. Jack stayed for the whole show. Benny left after Willie got off. And Benny, and I said, so I said to Jack next day, I said, "Jack, how'd you make that show?" He reached in his pocket and came out with two earplugs.
Jack's a smart man. He's done rather well in the casino business after his father died. He's done very well for himself.
Well, he kind of went out, but Benny Binion and Jackie Gaughan were always they're ever short sighted. They always thought downtown was the place to be. My dad today still doesn't understand neighborhood casinos. Both he and Benny believed in downtown.
And now it seems like downtown is coming back.
It's coming back, but it's never going to reach what it was. I say the downtown in the 50s and the 60s was the local market, and it was big. Today, it's part of a local market.
Very good. Very interesting. All right. So we thank you again for being here. We hope everybody goes out and hits lots of royal flushes. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.